and welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, talking as always with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello and welcome, Ed.
Hello, Jennifer, and how are you?
Well, I'm doing very well today. Uh-huh. I would rank this as a top day.
Look at you. Why is that?
Well, because we're going to be talking about college rankings.
Oh.
So I thought I would get us into the discussion
It's a top quintile day.
This is a top quintile day.
That is the least subtle way of getting into a conversation. College rankings. There you go. And you're having a top day. All right.
Very good. So that's the discussion we're going to have today is college rankings. So you are president of Southwestern University
in
Georgetown.
Thank you.
I'm imagining, you guys must pay attention to the rankings. U.S. News and World Report. Mm-hmm. Lots of places come out with rankings that will say,
Forbes.
They'll say best university, best liberal arts college.
Washington Monthly.
Best technical institution. They'll categorize them in different categories, graduate salaries, graduate employment. You guys must pay attention to that.
We do. We look at that. I mean, that's not our driving force because we have a mission and we have goals and we abide by those. But there are external groups that will come out and create generic rankings. I mean, it's important to, first of all, point out that these are generic rankings.
Okay. What do you mean they're generic?
Well, they don't say anything about a particular student. So they're kind of an average of averages where each of these organizations will measure different things. And for example, if you take a look at the Washington Monthly and you take a look at Forbes and you take a look at U.S. News and World Report, they actually are measuring different things. And that's why you'll see different kind of rankings amongst those schools within those rubrics for ranking. But they're all generic. Education should be an individual experience. And so the rankings should be individualized.
So there
should be the Jennifer Staton ranking. There should be the Ed Berger ranking when we were in high school that says, given who you are, your strengths, your weaknesses, the places where you should stretch, the places that you're afraid, the places that you're comfortable with, given your attitudes, given your personality, given your shyness factor or your outgoing factor or your partying factor or whatever factor, that you put that in and that as the stimulation, out comes a list of schools that are perfect for you from top to bottom.
I mean, we would have to do that ourselves because Forbes is not going to do that for every single high school student in the country.
Of course. And that's why these are generic rankings. They're measuring things that are out there and are measurable, but I'm not convinced are as impactful to an individual student as some other things.
So if I'm a high school freshman, sophomore, junior, and I'm out there trying to figure out places that might be good matches for me, what do I do with these rankings? They're not the personalized Jennifer Staton list. So what do I do with them?
Well, the first thing that I would suggest people do with respect to rankings is find out, which you can do, you can go online, and find out what exactly goes into these rankings. And usually it's things like graduation rate, it's alumni giving, because that measures how the people who've experienced that education value it by how much they give back and see it as a value. They measure it by SAT scores and so forth. But some of these things – so you first of all should understand what the metrics are and figure out whether the Washington Monthly maybe is more appropriate for you than some other thing or whatever. I'll tell you some interesting things though to show you how weird these rankings can be, and I won't mention names.
Oh, but, come on.
But one of the national ranking systems,
yeah,
when they look at graduation rates and they kind of grade you as an institution on that, it's not the graduation rate they grade. They look at kind of the averages of the kind of student population you're bringing in, and they internally set a bar for where they think those students who they've never met going through an education – that they've never experienced are going to have, you know, that what that rate is. And then if, in fact, the institution is at or above that, they get high marks. If it's below what the internal number is that we don't even know, Southwestern's number, I don't know for this group, then we get dinged. And so it's very interesting that some of these things are so arbitrary that we don't even know what they are.
When a publication or an institution or an organization decides to rank schools, are you approached to participate voluntarily, or is this all data that is gathered kind of whether you all know it or like it or not?
I think that both. So okay. Some data they just have, and then other data we voluntarily submit. Also, you're asked to kind of rank them. It's almost like a swimsuit competition. All the presidents
What, your photos are lined up and they say
– basically, all the presidents get a list of schools and you kind of just – the presidents kind of give their own interpretation. High school guidance counselors give their interpretation. So it's so subjective. You know, what school do you like? What school looks sexy? And then you rank these things, and that goes to be part of this thing as well.
That sounds like a stew. Honestly, yeah. You dump a bunch of stuff in a pot and you kind of stir it up. And you get a generic
ranking. It does say something, but it's not clear how meaningful it is for an individual student. And as long as students are aware of that, look, we have so many students in this country going to college and university, and we have so many institutions of higher learning. Why? It's because not one size fits all. And it's up to the student and the student's family and friends and mentors and advisors to kind of find that perfect fit where they walk around that campus and say, you know what, I belong here. And it doesn't make a difference what this group says or that group says. I know this is for me. And then you know you pick the right spot.
I'm wondering if there's some utility in these rankings, though, in just helping to maybe as a tool for students coming up with their own list. Because as you say, there's so many institutions out there. And, you know, back when we were looking at colleges, there was no internet. So there wasn't a ton of information out there. You had to request it and they sent you a catalog. And there's so much out there now that I wonder if for some students it's not useful to at least have a way to narrow down the thousands to tens or hundreds.
Well, you know, the White House came out with an initiative a year or so ago wanting to rank institutions in a variety of different measures. And the world of higher education came out very strongly against that because – you know, what does the federal government know about higher education and ranking and measuring efficiency and effectiveness? I'm not sure that that body maybe is the most expert in those fields. But what the Department of Education came out with was not a ranking but a rating system. And that is now available online. You can go to the Department of Education and you can look and it won't rank but it will rate and it will show you things like, you know, salaries and graduation rates and costs and scholarship money. And, you know, there are some errors in the data, so it's not all perfect. In fact, just looking at it, I saw some mistakes. But it does at least allow you to compare what you want to look at and see. And you can compare schools and you can put in your own kind of desires, whether it's a location or whatever. And so there is – that information is available.
Well, and what an interesting distinction. I'm so glad you brought it up between ranking and rating.
Correct.
Because those aren't necessarily interchangeable. They're two different kinds of measures.
Exactly. That's right. I mean, you can just report the news and that's one thing, or you can then put a filter through it where you then say, okay, and here's the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and then the 5,000.
Is it splitting hairs to talk about the difference between ranking and rating?
Okay. So you want the solution to last week's puzzler. When you look at me with that little glint in your eye.
Well, and it's all about hair. So
here was the question from last week, which was a little bit kind of perverse, but you just have to think of it intellectually.
And listen very closely.
Yes.
When Ed explains it, listen real close.
Well, not explain. Okay, here's the
well,
question.
Well, when
the
you
question
read
is,
it out.
Can we show that there cannot be a pair of people on this planet that have the same exact number of body hairs on their body? And I'm excluding, you know, people who are completely bald because, you know, just we are animals and there are hairs on our body and on our head and so forth. So can you show that there cannot exist a pair of people that have the exact same body hair count?
Okay.
That's the question.
When I heard this last time and
yes.
then thinking through it, I
Please.
Got kind of lost in the wording, in the negatives,
and
the cannot.
I'm sorry. I deliberately, because if I could say it another way, it might tip my hand. So I was trying to make
okay.
it cute and maybe it didn't work. So go ahead. What were you thinking?
Well, so another way to say it would be to flip the negative to positive and say, are there two people on the planet who have the same amount of body hair, right?
Brilliant. That is the equivalent question. And you could have asked it that way. I was trying to kind of sneak something by, but you're right. Are there two non-bald people
right,
on this planet that have the exact same number of body hair. Not close, but the identical exact number. Well, and how would you show that without the perverse exercise of counting someone's body hair?
Well, you can do – well, because – so first my answer is yes.
Okay. So your guess is yes?
My guess is yes.
Okay, now
– and that it can be done without counting people's thank goodness body hair.
Thank goodness.
I mean, because it's a numbers and a statistics and – I mean, it's a numbers game,
okay,
right?
Okay, so tell us about the numbers game. Well, I mean, how are you thinking?
All right. Even if you take the non-bald people out of the pool, we're still talking 7 billion people,
there are
right?
about 7 billion people on
okay,
this planet.
Let's
that's
use
correct.
That round number.
Okay.
What, everybody's got hundreds of thousands of hairs on their body, right? I mean, you know that without counting. So given that there are 7 billion people, but the pool of like the number of hairs you have is hundreds of thousands, two people have to have the same number because if you put that 7 billion people down into hundreds of thousands of numbers of hairs, at least two of them are bound to have the same number.
Absolutely correct. And you've answered it beautifully. The reality is that we have more people than we have body hair counts. So imagine if you took – and let's get rid of a billion people who have completely no hair or infants and babies that have no hair. So let's say we're left with 6 billion people. Okay. So I got rid of a billion people.
Yeah.
Okay. So 6 billion people. Now let's suppose that we gave them all – T-shirts that had on the T-shirt the number of body hairs they had, which somehow we figured out.
Right.
And we know, and you can do an upper limit. I mean, even a million, no one has a million body hairs.
Right.
The hairiest of person does not have a million body hairs. And it's interesting actually just even, you know, to look, you know, at your body and to look at your arm or to look at the, you know, kind of at your scalp and realize that in fact that there aren't a lot of hairs because the hairs need skin around them to grow. So in fact, we don't have that many. And I think you're right. Probably hundreds of thousands is probably an upper limit. But even if you say a million.
Yeah. Just so for easy math.
Let's give everyone a number from 1 to a million, depending upon their body hair count, even though let's not worry about how we found it.
Right.
Okay? Now, everyone's wearing those T-shirts, and then we have all these rooms. We have a million rooms, one labeled 1 all the way up to a million. And then we just say to everyone, okay, everyone go into the room that's on your T-shirt. Is it possible that 6 billion people will all go into their own rooms?
No, there aren't enough rooms.
Exactly. There's a million doors, and there's 6 billion people. And so therefore, there has to be at least one door, probably a lot more, but at least one door has to have more than one person, which means there is a pair that always has the same number of body hair. Who that pair is, who they are, we'll never know, thank goodness, but they exist, which is interesting. And this is an example in mathematics of what's called the pigeonhole principle.
Ah.
When you have a few pigeonholes and you have a lot of things that you're going to put in them, you have to know that one pigeonhole will be filled by more than one thing. And that proves a lot of important high-level theorems in mathematics, and this was a frivolous way of illustrating that.
Oh, it was a great way. I was going to say, Ed, I rank this as one of the top puzzlers of
by your
ed
ranking
so far.
And we have no idea what that metric is, but
– We it's just my enjoyment of it.
I'm delighted.
Right. Well, thank you, Ed, for helping us keep our brains sharp. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Find out more at southwestern.edu and keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org. You can also find us on iTunes. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT News.